Do you remember the 90s?
Yeah.
You know, people were talking about getting piercings and getting tribal tattoos.
Yeah.
And people were singing about saving the planet and forming bands.
Yeah.
There's a place where that idea still exists as a reality, and I've been there.
Where is it?
Portland.
Oregon?
Yeah. Dream of the 90s is alive.
Portland, 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 Portland. And I think the dream of the 90s is going to be right here today from NPR Music. You're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. I'm here with Robin Hilton.
Hey, Bob.
I'm here with Stephen Thompson.
Hello, Bob.
And our new member to NPR Music, we welcome with big congratulations and a few hand claps.
Yay.
Ann Powers.
I'm so excited.
Is joining us as a music critic here at NPR Music. We are thrilled to have you.
I'm thrilled, too, although it would be nice to be in Portland drinking coffee and thinking about the 90s.
Yes, which is
so
where
that
probably
song is supposed to be. Well, it's not supposed to be. It is very funny, but when I listened to it the whole time, I was thinking, I want to go to Portland. That's where I want to be right now.
Where young people go to retire.
Right, exactly.
And that's where we lost Carrie Brownstein to.
In many ways. The dream of Carrie Brownstein has moved on to television.
That's right.
Well, so, I'm not stepping into Carrie's shoes. We wear different shoe sizes, but I'm a huge fan of her, and I'm just thrilled to even be in the same room with that she has been in and with all of you.
And just
enough
a quick...
gushing.
You've been working for the LA Times. You want to just tell people who don't know your work for so many years of great pop music writing.
Well, yes, for the past, since 2006, I was the pop critic for the LA Times. I've also worked for the New York Times, Spin, Rolling Stone, yada, 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 many, many music publications. But this is
any,
like
any that I've heard of?
Well, no, I never worked for The Onion, so I guess. Darn. But honestly, lifelong goal is to be associated with NPR and NPR Music. So I have come to the mountain.
We're living the dream here.
That's right. Living the dream.
We're living the 90s dream and the NPR dream.
It's true.
So if I say the 90s, that's what our show is today. We're doing a whole show on the 90s. We got bashed about our show in the 80s. And if it wasn't for the 80s, great music in the 90s wouldn't have happened. So I'll give
it's
that
true.
Much to the 80s, right?
It's
so
totally true.
If I say the 90s to you all in one word on the count of three, what would you say? One, two, three.
Nirvana.
There it is.
That's two out of three anyway, Nirvana and grunge.
And so we're just going to start right off doing the obvious, and then hopefully we'll dig into some stuff in the course of the day, best albums, best songs, sort of trends, all sorts of things we'll do on this show. We won't at all cover everything. You can right now write down on the piece of paper in front of you, you can write, Dear Idiots.
Dear idiots. It is a crime that you would neglect to include.
And hold it right there. And as we do the show, you can add to the list. And we appreciate that. And we want you to do that. And we want you to do that on our blog. This is where we have to start. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
I miss this band so much.
I know.
This is going to be a lot of nostalgia because we have a lot of 30-ish people who were in their teens,
yeah,
right? Everybody.
Some 30.
I mean, well, people 20 years ago, for the most part, who, yeah, which is the 20th anniversary of Nevermind, is coming up by Nirvana.
Well, it's this year.
I was a college radio music director from 1991 to 1995, and the first thing I opened, the first piece of mail I opened as a college radio music director, was the CD single for Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Excellent. Psych.
And it was packaged with a Nirvana t-shirt. And I was like, wow, a t-shirt! I wonder what it sounds like. And it was like a scene in a movie where it's like the first thing you open is the thing that completely changed music.
It was like a scene in a Cameron Crowe movie called Singles.
Except it would have been longer.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And there would have been a cute blonde in there with you. But at any rate, I'm from Seattle, so although when this record came out, I was living in California, and I'm actually in my 40s. And so for me, Nirvana's rise and the whole rise of the whole Seattle scene was like this amazing culmination of my punk youth in Seattle. It was so awesome, and I'm very sad that it's over, but at the same time...
I feel the same way about my youth.
But just in terms of its impact, in terms of what it did for music,
We had just come out of the 80s, right? It was, to me, I just so did not like the pop music, the synth pop, the hair metal, nothing that was on the radio. I didn't like any of it. And then I turned on the radio, and I heard this on the radio for the first time, is where I heard Nirvana. And it just told me everything, that whole period, it's over, and guitar rock is back, and it was just a bullet.
It basically opened a fire hydrant.
It was huge.
They called it the year punk broke, I believe. That was one of the ways it was described back in the day, and such a great time for all of us who'd come up with indie music also in the 80s. The stuff not played on the radio, to finally hear that on the radio was astounding.
It took 15 years for punk to finally hit the radio regular time, but that's okay.
Sonic Youth had singles. I mean, what the...
And grunge was really, I mean, unless someone can correct me, it happens often. But to me, it seems like grunge was sort of the last really big collective movement that everyone was sort of swept up in. You know, like how we had disco and then,
hip-hop,
you know, punk and hip hop. And then, you know, because after the 90s, now we're all, it's so fragmented, right, and we're customizing our listening experiences.
Well, I think that since then there have been several movements that people sort of expected to possibly be this. I remember, you know, speaking of big albums that came out in the 90s, when Chemical Brothers, mm-hmm, Dig Your Own Hole came out, there was suddenly this giant collective,
and electronica.
Is electronica the new grunge? And you know, to a point, I mean, it more bled into other music than served as a, you know, massive popular movement in its own right. But that's sort of the closest thing I can think of.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that even speaking of electronica, at that time, that was when raves were huge too, remember?
Right.
And giant fields full of lollipop-sucking children were dancing to beats, and you know, it was a really good era for crowds.
Let's do this. Let's all pick our album of the decade, and let's start with Stephen Thompson for the 90s album of the decade.
Album of the decade. You know, I oh man, this is, it's so hard to do, because you know, I loved, I mean, obviously Nirvana I loved Robin's pick, which I'll let Robin announce. I loved the Lemonheads' It's a Shame About Ray. It's just a wonderful record. The one that ultimately stands out as my favorite is an album called Grace by Jeff Buckley, which ultimately managed to not only be a wonderful record that over the course of the next, you know, 15 or so years has ultimately grown into a very, very popular album. All along the way, it's been enormously influential, and you know, everybody from Radiohead was heading in that direction, you know, from the beginning, but it certainly was an influence on that sort of Radiohead and Coldplay and all these big-voiced, grandiose rock records that came from a place that was also
slow-moving song
that was also very tender and fragile and tragic, which, you know, that album sort of felt that way even before Jeff Buckley died in 1997.
You want to hear the title cut?
Yeah, we'll go ahead and play Grace.
That's great. There wasn't a record that sounded like this one.
I think that's right. There are elements of the production that are a little tiny bit, you know, we've talked a little bit about 90s production, kind of as we were leading up to this recording, where we were talking about how the production's a little bit thinner, it's a little bit more sterile, it's a little bit more compressed. Other than slight little quirks in the production, this is a completely timeless record. And to the point where it's more ubiquitous now than it's ever been, to the point where if you hear Hallelujah every third audition on American Idol.
Leonard Cohen wants the song retired, you know?
But I can see why.
But, I mean, Jeff Buckley to me is like also the emotion, the combination of like virility and emotion. Him and Kurt in a different way. This was a great era for feelingful males. Well, there's another band that had a feelingful male.
Yeah, can I do that? So I'll pick mine, which is we're going to play from OK Computer. I want to play No Surprises, which we are recording this show just 2 days before we will all wake up to listen to a new Radiohead record.
Right.
It's still eight albums later, still an event to hear a band.
It's
that
really
is
amazing.
Sensational. Yeah, it's really amazing. So
and this is your favorite album of the decade. This isn't even my favorite Radiohead album.
Right. We could have gone with the bands.
I would have gone with the bands. Yeah. But they're all brilliant.
Thank you. So I'd like to play No Surprises. No Surprises was the first song they went in the studio to do. This is the first take of the first song. They subsequently tried lots of takes for this song.
Wow.
Came back to this. I think Tom York once said that every time they tried to redo the song, it was like doing a cover of their own song.
Huh.
And then they went back to the original. So let's play No Surprises from Radiohead. The record came out, OK Computer, came out in 97, right? Yeah. We'll just never get the show in under 4 hours.
I got to tell you, I got teary-eyed listening to that, and I just realized that is going to happen probably with every single song we play. even the heavy, harder stuff. It's just like when I heard that Nirvana, it just got me choked up listening to it, just thinking of that time.
Are you going to get choked up when I play OMC's How Bizarre?
Oh,
absolutely. Or A Little Bit of Rita. What's that song, A Little Bit of Rita?
A Little Bit of Mambo Number 5.
Yeah,
Mambo
Vegas.
Number 5.
Awesome.
That actually came at the end of the decade,
hit
which
it.
Also told me all the great things that have happened over the last 10 years are now over.
And Powers, we've played a number of really heartfelt things. What do you have for us? We're doing Album of the Decade. We're in the 90s.
I agree with Stephen that it's very difficult to choose one album of any era, particularly the 90s, such a rich decade. But I opted to choose The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, certainly one of the most important albums to come out that decade, and also in hip-hop and R&B. Lauryn Hill, you know, was in the Fugees. She's a rapper. She's a wonderful singer. And there was rumors that she was making the solo album. I come home from a business trip. I walk into my kitchen in Brooklyn at the time. My husband does not say hello to me. He says, sit down. I have to play this for you. And he had a cassette tape of it. This happened to me twice in this decade with amazing albums. And he's like, sit down, play the whole thing, start to finish. Not a word was said. We were both just like, oh my. Everything was different after this album. Everything was different for combining R&B and hip-hop elements, for women in hip-hop. It just really changed so much. And it did it by having a very forward-thinking attitude and sound, but also connecting with classic soul music and reggae music. She recorded a lot of it in Jamaica. It's just unforgettable, unforgettable music.
Yo, remember yo. Back on the Bully when cats used to harmonize like,
yo, check out
yo, my men and my women, don't forget about the dean. This is not the most of king, yo, it's about a thing, yo,
feel
yo.
Real good when your hands in the air and lick two shots in the atmosphere.
Since you were looking for your friend, the one you let hit it and never called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to Benjamins? Yeah. You act like you ain't him, they give him a little trim to begin. Now you think you really gon' pretend like you wasn't down and you called him again. Plus when you give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. If you did it then, then you probably can. Talking out your neck saying you're a Christian, a Muslim, sleeping with the gin. Now that was the sin that did Jezebel in. Who you gon' tell when the repercussions spin? Showing off your ass cause you thinking it's a trend, girlfriend. Let me break it down for you again. You know I only say it cause I'm truly genuine. Don't be a hard rock when you really are a gin, baby girl. Respect is just the minimum.
Minimum.
But you still defending them now. Lauryn is only human. Don't think I haven't been through the same predicament. Let it sit inside your head like a million women in Philly pen. It's silly when girls sell their souls because of sin. Look at where you be in. Hair weaves like Europeans. Fake nails done by Koreans. Come again.
The one thing I can certainly say about every one of these so far, and I think I'm going to say that later in the show, is that they all, everything's holding up really well.
Very well. And
classic.
I'm so glad, Anne, that you mentioned how this record sounds, because I remember thinking when I first heard this, how does she do that? And just listening to the arrangements, thinking, who put that together? Does anyone listening to this realize how hard it is to do that? I mean, it's mind-blowing.
I know.
These arrangements.
I know, totally. And I think I love contemporary R&B, but there's something about this sound. There is no artifice to this sound. I mean, certainly there's amazing craft, but there isn't this sense of, you know, it's not auto-tuned, it's not played around with. And it's played around with in such a way that it lends more authenticity.
And it's playful.
Absolutely playful.
It's lost nothing.
I know, isn't that crazy?
It doesn't even, there's nothing about that sounds dated in the slightest.
I wish I could say that Lauryn's lost nothing, but she's been trying to make a comeback that's not been going.
It hasn't worked
so
great. But, you know, I have actually pulled this record out to listen to within the last week.
Wow.
Completely unrelated to doing this show.
Cosmic.
Robin Hilton, you haven't given us your album of the decade. We're talking
about
90s.
Going all the way back to 1998. 1998 was a great year for music, and I had been, it actually ties in with the Lauryn album for me personally, because I had been living abroad for a number of years and hadn't been back to the States in a long, long time, and I came back at the end of 1998 for the holidays and visited with friends, and everyone was handing me records. You have to listen to this, you have to listen to this, you have to listen to this. The, you know, Miseducation, Lauryn Hill was definitely one of them. Another one that someone gave me to listen to at the time that came out in 1998 was the Neutral Milk Hotel album, In the Airplane Over the Sea. And with all of these records, I just remember thinking, what's happening? What am I missing? I have got to get back here. I mean, because it seemed like music had just reached this amazing point in that decade. And
you weren't hanging out with Blur or something?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't, you know, and I really, and it actually wasn't long after that, within a year after that, that I came back and realized, okay, I got to get home. But
New Jermuck Hotel. Just in time for the ass end of the decade, yeah. When everything had fallen apart.
But talk about a record that holds up, Nutrimilk Hotel's In the Airplane Over the Sea. So I could play the whole thing and it'd be perfect, but I'm going to play a song called Holland. 1945, specifically for the way that this song sounds, just the overblown guitars. It's just amazing.
2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
So we've been giving a lot of thought this week to how are the 90s back. Well, Jeff Mangum, after a decade of hiding out, has been just ever so slightly popping his head up to see what's going on. And he's going to curate All Tomorrow's Parties in the fall, which is incredible.
We hope to be there.
Yeah, and we hope to be there. So I hope that maybe this next decade...
And some shows, too.
He's been doing some shows. He's been showing up at other people's shows here and there sporadically over the past couple of years.
As a crowd member?
Yeah. No, he'll show up on stage, play one or two songs, and disappear. But so hopefully...
Which means 6 more weeks of great music.
Right.
One thing that I noticed listening to these 4, back to back to back to back, you've got Jeff Buckley, Tom York, Lauryn Hill, and Jeff Mangum of Nutrimilk Hotel, all of whom are sort of vaguely kind of iconic, almost otherworldly.
Anti-pop in a sense, although I don't know if that's the right term.
But I mean, Lauryn Hill disappeared for a long time. Jeff Mangum has disappeared for a long time. Obviously, Jeff Buckley died, but I mean, he was even sort of an ethereal presence.
These are not extroverted necessarily.
Tom
people.
York is a very introverted, kind of almost alien figure. Yeah. Kurt Cobain, P.J. Harvey. A lot of these, the people we think of as the iconic figures of that decade, were not necessarily glad-handers.
No, there was this time when the hidden things in our culture came into the center. You know, there was a Pavement album called Brighten the Corners, and it was like the corners were really bright in the 90s. It was an amazing thing to be part of, but it didn't totally last now, did it, Stephen?
Well, I think, you know, we were asked to sort of pick our defining trends, and, you know, one is that sort of introverted people were sort of put in positions where they have to be extroverted. I think another, and sort of my choice, you know, among the defining trends was the inevitable degradation of things that at the beginning of the decade seemed revolutionary. And, you know, of course, that's a very half-empty way of looking at the 90s. But when you look at what were the revolutionary bands, Nirvana, mm-hmm. Rage Against the Machine, and this is more late 80s, early 90s, but like Jane's Addiction.
Right.
Big, blunt, very sort of seemingly uncompromising bands that were making great records. And over the course of the decade, particularly the example everyone thinks of is sort of the way that like Nirvana and Pearl Jam and
Smashing
Pumpkins, Alice in Chains, but then you started to get Candlebox and
Three Doors Down.
Seven Mary Three. Don't make me break out my cumbersome. Maybe the worst song of the 90s.
The hair on that guy, too. Oh, my goodness. Oof.
So well, things went downhill.
Very strident record. Yes, things inevitably went downhill. That's my trend.
But the center cannot hold, but that, much the, like this show.
But the, by the end of the decade, you had Limp Bizkit and, you know, 100 in Crazy Town. And
Insane Clown Posse.
Oh, don't.
Don't I'm sorry, I'm off, knocking the Juggalos.
Step off the Juggalos, Powers. So the song that I used to define the inevitable degradation that occurs...
Of your discussion.
Of my of my youth and my in this discussion.
This is hard for us, you guys. Come on, let us have our moments.
That's right.
This has just been sticking inside of him for 20 years, Mr. Hilton. Would you
all right, I'll let you get it all out. All right.
This is all I have. The song I've chosen to typify this is a song called Shine by Collective Soul.
Do we want to hear more than 30 seconds?
No, we need to hear all of it. No. You need to at least get to the part where he goes, yeah!
Now, I have to say, I actually like this song.
I have to say that Collective Soul later made a couple of records that I actually like. But at the time, this just seemed like the most appalling chunk of trend-chasing...
Scrunge.
Scrunge.
That's what somebody called it.
I think Candlebox is what you guys do to your hair?
We scrunge our hair.
Both Stephen and Anne, because you can't see, have...
90s hair.
Wonderful curly hair. And Robin and I don't.
Hey. Yeah. No.
You guys have 21st century hair. That's all there is to it.
That's right.
Is it okay if we tell them that?
No. I like to preserve the illusion.
There are photos of you guys on the website.
Yeah. I'm wearing a hat.
Yeah, wears a hat.
We need a palate cleanser.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yeah. Free us from the collective
soul. Thinking of trends, this one might seem silly, but there was a point in the late 80s for me that I just figured, oh, well, it's over.
All music is over.
Well, certainly rock music, it's done. It's just poisoned. People are just...
By poison.
The loud, hard music, I couldn't stand. Even the arty music was synth-based. I couldn't stand, and I thought it was just done. I thought we were going to go into the 90s, and for better or for worse, it was going to be rap and hip-hop and other forms of rock music, but it wasn't going to be a rock music I was ever going to care about. It didn't happen. So for me, the one thing I have to say that happened, the trend, is that rock music kept going, and that's a good
thanks
thing.
Thanks to a band called Spin Doctors.
So let's give a cut. From Spin Doctors. So let's just play this and redeem ourselves a little bit. Yeah.
In my eyes, in this pose, in disguises, no. Face lies the snake in the sun in my disgrace.
Taking four hands to pull the fader down on this song right now.
I'm so glad you like this, Bob. I just would assume that you wouldn't.
This is just too...
too perfect.
Too perfect.
It's about all I ever ask of music to be is wrapped up in that.
And, of course, Soundgarden, what was it, 94?
I think so.
Part of the Seattle takeover.
That's right. One of the early good bands.
Yes, indeed.
When I think of trends of the 90s, I was trying to think of everything. Okay, first of all, we think grunge. But really, grunge and Nirvana and that whole thing, I mean, by 94, 95, maybe, it was starting to...
Well, Kurt Cobain died in 94.
That was a huge, like a chasm opened up and things changed.
Yeah, it wasn't...
And suddenly Candlebox crawled out.
Certainly.
My sister-in-law went to high school with Candlebox. You just step off the Candlebox.
And it wasn't just, I was thinking of other trends. And the only one that I could come up with that seemed consistent to me from the beginning of the decade all the way to the end, and we still see it now, is that it was a really strong decade for strong women. Lots of amazing, powerful female acts that came out, just, like PJ Harvey, Liz Phair, Tori Amos, Lucinda Williams, Lauryn Hill, Courtney Love,
Missy Elliott,
even adult contemporary stuff like Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah, huge. Queen Latifah. I'm just.
Even the ones that we dare not mention in this particular discussion, like Celine Dion.
Well, she was huge, but I mean, I'm thinking even someone like, say what you will about Courtney Love and the train wreck that her life has become. But
no. Are you kidding? Live Through This could have been my top record of the could have been my top record of the decade.
It'd be my top 10 for sure.
Easy.
So
and Bikini Kill.
I struggled so hard to come up, pick one artist, one woman out of that very long list. I started off as like, I gotta, maybe I'll play Fiona Apple or something. I mean, because she was huge too. And I was thinking, I'll have to play PJ Harvey. She's got this new record out, which is just as good as anything she's ever done, showing that she's obviously still relevant, along with a lot of other artists we're going to talk about later. And the song I want to play from PJ Harvey, because she just rocks, is from the album To Bring You My Love, and the cut is Long Snake Moan.
Awesome.
Such a great song.
I don't know. Collective Soul was pretty good.
I hear this song and it just makes me want to smash something. It's
awesome.
This record changed lives. It changed lives of people I know, like, for example, me.
Well, a great range to this, too. Oh, what's the other the softer song, Little Fish, Little Fish.
Oh, yeah, Down by the Water.
Yeah, Down by the Water. You know, this album had a great range to it, too. It wasn't all just like this. It really had a lot of...
dynamics, yeah. Which is what she's still up to today.
Were you writing back when this record
yes.
came out?
And I remember going to a PJ Harvey show, I think I was telling you, Robin, earlier, at the Academy, which is this venue that's not around in New York anymore, and every music writer... was there, and it was like that old ad for the speakers that blew your hair back, you know? We were all like, oh my goodness, what just happened? It was,
and that was for cassettes, too, Maxell cassettes. Right? Or Memrex.
PJ Harvey's not a cassette, though. She is something beyond.
Just an absolute force. And I played her with Apologies to Liz Phair, who was my first choice, and I thought, no, I got to rock out with
Love
this.
Love Liz, too, but yeah. In a different way.
I'm here with Ann Powers, new to NPR Music, Stephen Thompson, old to NPR, NPR Music, and Robin Hilton.
Really old to NPR Music.
And I'm Bob Boylan. We're talking the 90s. We're talking about trends, defining sounds of the 90s right now. We're going to Ann Powers.
Well, we've been rocking out this hour, which is appropriate. I'm not against it at all. But we have to acknowledge also that the 90s was... a massive era for hip-hop, too. It was really the era that hip-hop came into its own, took over internationally, became the huge commercial force that it still is today, arguably the defining force in popular music now in some ways, and also an amazing era for artistic underground, however you want to call it, backpacker rap. Everyone from, you know, Tupac to Biggie to Dre to Snoop to Tribe Called Quest to all of these amazing artists, Guru, Gangstar. I could just go on and on. And of course, the rise of amazing producers like Timbaland. And this next artist who I wanted to play, the great Missy Elliott. Missy Elliott and Timbaland coming out of Virginia Beach with this sound that sounded like it was from some planet outside of our solar system. You know, different, innovative. It's still with us today. And she also, another strong woman, Robin.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Amazing image. And her use of language, which we're going to hear on this song called Hit 'Em With the He. I don't think it's been matched in terms of the way she used rap to say something totally new and sometimes kind of nonsensical, but sensible underneath the nonsensical sounds.
Sorry. It was only my way. It's like,
hey,
we had to.
90s.
We never get him mentioned something. Otherwise, and he was huge for mainstreaming hip hop and rap and everything.
Dempsey ever there?
Yeah,
do you want me to do that instead?
Oh heavens, no! Let's play Missy.
Missy. Yeah, I like that. It's the Q to the B to the double E, spitting lovely, and it don't stop. Rock shine through my tank top, where your bank stop. I deposit all in one drop. Think not, excuse me, but I like the flow, cause this joint knock harder than Indicat, and I'll be off the wall like the locks. Night box filled with Benjamins, me and my girl Missy getting pissy up in Bennigan's. Making all you other rappers begin again. Like Finnegan, Christians repent, then sin again. Girls wanna be my friend again. Lay up in my crib, get up in my linens in. While Miss Amina hit notes like Serafina. I subpoena you to my funk room. See, I hit you with the she hit you with the
It wasn't your car that had me all in love with you. Trunk full of tunes, yeah, tunes. I drive through your hood. I hit 'em with the high. I stop 'em with the high.
and me. Oh, yeah, yeah. Meet me at the bar.
You can meet me at the bar.
Long iced tea, slurp me swiftly. Meet me at the bar. What's up, star? We know who you is. Shoot, no kid, I thought you had an OD. The way I roll this Dutch, the way I roll this Dutch.
People the way I roll this Dutch. Feeling it? Totally.
Pass that Dutch. Pass that Dutch.
Completely
that
still
this
relevant.
This is NPR.
It just sounds... The thing is, we've talked about this record on this show before. This is just an unbelievable sounding record.
I know.
It's lost nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. Which seems to be a theme. Like, boy,
none
take me back
stuff,
to yeah. the 90s because it still all sounds so good. What is that about?
I'm sorry. I don't want to rag on the 80s, but you absolutely cannot say the same thing of popular music played during the 80s. It just it sounds so dated. It does. It sounds dated. It doesn't hold up like this.
But could you say it about indie rock of the 80s or indie music of the
80s? Well, it feels a little dated to me, some of it, but... Certainly not as much as popular music, no.
Which sort of may bring us to nostalgia. It may be the age...
We were all young.
Right.
Except for Bob.
And that you're feeling
young
it.
At heart.
I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that...
I think that's a factor. I think the fact that you know, I was in college from 90
If we played this for intern 93674, do you think she would think that those
she
songs...
She digs it. We were talking 90s music.
Well, and that's the thing. We were talking about brainstorming.
She just gave us a thumbs up.
Yeah, we were brainstorming what we were going to talk about on the show, and the other numerically named interns were immediately rattling off names of... I mean, that's
but
what
does
they,
it sound
they
as
kids.
Fresh, I guess, is the, that's what we're saying here. It still holds up.
I think that's a question for our listeners.
It is a question.
It is.
But I do think a lot of the technological innovations that are still with us today sort of have their seeds in this time period, especially in hip-hop and R&B music, which you can see a direct line. And somebody like Timbaland is still making great productions today. So, and a lot of these artists are still around. So,
well, Bob, I don't want to put you on the spot, but we've talked about 90s, you know, just that period. And you've said that, you know, you're not as in tune with that whole period. And you are a little older than us, since you weren't a 20-something in the 90s. Do you think that's one of the reasons you didn't connect with music as much in popular music in the 90s?
I was having this discussion with Lars as I was gathering my stuff. Lars sits across from me, Lars Gottrich, producer here at Pure Music. And I was trying to say to him, explain to him that you have to be in the right frame for a certain music to hit you.
Mm-hmm.
So in the early 90s, I was a new father. I had a little baby running around the house, and loud grunge music didn't fit. It was great music, but the music that I was attracted to and wanted in the household at the time was a more ethereal music, music that had gentler tones to it. And it wasn't like, because that's what I wanted to make sure that my kid didn't hear grungy music. It's just it wasn't the frame of mind that you were in. It just didn't seem right. It seemed like putting up something ugly, which that music is. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean it is rebellious, in-your-face music. And you don't necessarily want a two-year-old to hear that.
And it's
or it doesn't fit. Maybe that's the way.
It's also very like tribal communal music. I think that was a big thing in the 90s. All these different musics we're citing are often connected with subcultures, you know, and even there's that famous Nirvana line about our little tribe has always been until the end or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you were in a more individual space maybe.
Right, like, and so someone like Daniel Lanois fit my bill, you know, and he made beautiful records throughout the 90s. We could play a Daniel Lanois record. How about this? Let's do Biggest Surprises of the Decade, and I'm going to go take us right to someone who I was madly in love with in the 80s music, and his music, and his name was Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan. He was a Pakistani singer of devotional music, Sufi devotional music, and it's the kind of music that it just carries you away when you get into it because it's of its repetition and so forth. And the surprise for me was that Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan actually made a record that you almost could call a pop record.
Yeah.
And he did it with a fellow named Michael Brook. Michael Brook was somebody who I met when he was touring with John Hassell. John Hassell is a trumpet player, played with Brian Eno is how he's best known.
So many names.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, okay, I'll stop. So the point is, it was a whole school of very ambient music that both Hassell and Eno and Michael Brook was based in. Michael Brook, at one more name, at the behest of Peter Gabriel, a name we all know, said, hey, why don't you and Nusrat get together and do a record? And they did this record called Must Must. They did two records together, but M-U-S-T-T was one of the first albums of the 90s that really floored me, and I'd like to play the title track from it. It's called Must Must.
Namaste. Kalandar mast mast dam mast kalandar mast dam mast kalandar mast mast dam mast kalandar mast mera virad hai dam dam ali ali mera virad hai dam dam ali ali sakhi lal kalandar mast mast sakhi lal kalandar mast mast jule lal kalandar mast mast dam mast kalandar mast mast dam kalandar mast mera virad hai dam dam ali ali mera virad hai dam dam ali ali sakhi lal kalandar mast mast sakhi lal kalandar mast mast jule lal kalandar mast mast dam mast kalandar mast mast dam mast kalandar mast dam mast
And a voice that was very influential on someone we played earlier, Jeff Buckley.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Well, and I'd like to say that I was cool enough to know who Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan was before this, but I was introduced to him and his music when he partnered with another iconic 90s right. artist, Eddie Vedder, when
yes.
they did the soundtrack to Dead Man Walking yeah. in 95 or 6.
And we'll be talking a little bit about Pearl Jam yep. later, my homies, but, you know...
That's how I refer to them.
I just want to say that this was a really good, great era for world music, too. World music coming yes. to the States. And you can't forget that after 9/11, it became a lot harder for international artists to tour in the States. And I saw so many great world music shows during the 90s, including Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, Master Musicians of Djajouka, lots of African musicians, Caetano Veloso. Mm-hmm. I mean, amazing stuff. There, many of them, some of them are still around today. Some are gone. Nusrat is gone to that. To another dimension, but it really was a great time for music worldwide.
Absolutely.
After that exquisite music, something I like to do often in my life, let's go from the sublime to the ridiculous. And
so we're all looking at
that
Stephen.
That would have to be Stephen's.
Which somehow brings everybody back to me. The song I'd like to play is by Collective Soul.
How do you make that noise? I can't do it.
We'll do a session later.
Wait, are you talking about...
Yeah,
no, that. All right, I picked...
an international artist.
Aren't
they from Canada?
Well, one thing that I was thinking about in terms of... And it kind of fits in with defining trends a little bit, too. But one of the biggest surprises for me, Robin mentioned you could listen to the radio again in the 90s, that it was kind of safe to turn on pop music. And I believe it or not, I actually think that's a pretty good point. And for me, one of the defining trends when I look back on that music was how many great songs there were, for lack of a better term, modern rock one-hit wonders. Mm-hmm. That you had a bunch of these bands that had like just one great song in them, or in some of the cases, had a ton of great songs, but only one of them, everybody only knows what, like Harvey Danger. Every mm-hmm. Harvey Danger record is fantastic, but everybody knows Flagpole Sitta.
It's true. Mm.
Not a Surf has gone on to make a bunch of great records, but for the longest time, everybody just knew Popular.
Right.
But bands like, you know, like songs like The Way by Fastball, Primitive Radio Gods, standing outside a phone booth with the... Nah, wait, I can't do that song off the top
of my head. Is this where we get into the whole semisonic
That's stuff? Yeah, semisonic is it's a good time to bring up semisonic. One of my very, very favorite songs of the 90s, There She Goes by The Law.
Ah, fantastic song.
You know, tons of these bands. I mean, you could even hear a little bit of Stone Roses, a little bit of Pulp.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh, Common People, baby.
Oh. But they almost sort of registered as novelty songs in a way, but what makes them stand out from so many other novelty songs is they're actually great. And so here's another one that I
don't think The Streak is a great song by Ray Stevens.
So anyway, the song that I chose is by a band that I really know nothing about except for this one song.
I believe they're an international artist, but I might be wrong. Maybe they're from Cleveland.
I actually, it's what's amazing, I don't care at all. They're called Len, and the song is called Steal My Sunshine.
Sam?
Hey, you talked to Mark lately?
I haven't really talked to him, but he looks pretty down.
He looks pretty down. Yeah, well, maybe we should cheer him up then.
What do you suppose we should do?
Well, does he like butter tarts?
I was lying on the grass of Sunday morning of last week, indulging in my self-defeat.
When's a good part of the song coming?
Oh, come on!
Boo! I'm back in my 93 Mazda, little Mazda hatchback, and this is jamming on the radio.
Or to invoke another great band of the 90s that had about one hit, Elastica, in your Ford Fiesta.
Yes.
Elastica. Good band.
She's a sculptor now in the Bay Area somewhere, Justine.
Not to say that I don't want a palate cleanser.
Yeah,
now.
I was going to say.
Well, I know somebody who can cleanse your palate, Robin, with a mallet.
Stephen did say one of my personal surprises was that I could listen to the radio again. You know, I had spent the entire 80s unable to listen to popular radio. And starting with Nirvana and then just one thing after another, I could hear Beck, I could hear Liz Phair, I could hear Nirvana, I could hear Pearl Jam. I could just turn on the radio, commercial, FM.
Len.
Yeah, top 40 radio.
You could hear Len.
And hear...
You could hear Baby Got Back.
Hear music.
What is it with my homies? Such a Seattle show.
Well, so one of the bands that certainly huge defining act of the 90s, Smashing Pumpkins, and a band that I could hear on the radio when I was just driving around in my car on a Saturday afternoon. And I'm going to just pull out all the stops. I'm not going to, you know, mess with, well, here's one you don't know from Yish.
Here's a deep cut.
Here's a B-side demo.
This is 1979 from Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, an album title that began the backlash, I think, against Smashing Pumpkins for lots of obvious reasons. But this song, what a perfect song, and I used to love listening to this on the radio.
Ride above the street.
We talk about how records sound sonically, and this was a band that to me just really knew how to twist up a song sonically. Just the weird, they could just really distort reality with the sounds that they captured in their albums.
Well, that's such a gorgeous guitar sound.
That too. But just that's just a little bit of twisted electronic weird grit. The way they're processing their sound, and this is something I really loved about this band. And
and you know, there were great producers during this era, like Butch Vig, for example.
Right, there you go.
From Madison, Wisconsin. Sorry. I'm sorry, you know, you keep talking about Seattle.
I don't know that he worked on this record. I think they may have decided.
No, he worked on Gish.
Yeah.
Right.
But then later, you know, a lot of people were done with Smashing Pumpkins by the time Adore came out. I thought Adore was a great record, too. I still put it on to listen to. But Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, the double album, their third release.
So Flood worked on this record, and that just makes me want to mention, we didn't even mention Achtung Baby by U2, which hurts my heart, because that's another one of my favorites. And talk about a great sounding record, like you're saying.
Yeah.
That sound.
Achtung Baby is a great record.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes.
We could be here literally all week.
Have we mentioned Red Hot Chili Peppers? I once saw Red Hot Chili Peppers with opening acts Smashing Pumpkins and Pearl Jam.
Wow.
No. Yeah. Way.
I think we need to lean back, get some beers.
Put on our corduroys.
Any of you kids remember the Rubik's Cube? Wait, that's the
good age. Times. Never good mind. Times.
And you still have it.
Yeah, and I still do the Rubik's Cube. Yeah,
he's really fast at it, too.
Well, there were other kinds of music, though, in the 90s, right?
Wait, no.
Yes, there were.
Other
there
than this were, rock?
There was this rock. What is this rock? But
we're talking biggest surprise?
My surprise actually came from another scene that really came into its own in the 90s, which is what is now known as Americana music, sort of also sometimes called alt-country, occasionally called no-depression music. And this record was my surprise more on an individual basis. This was another record I heard initially on a cassette tape with a hand-scrawled title. I don't know what it was about that at that time, but it was by an artist that I'd actually loved for a while, but she hadn't put out a record for a while, Lucinda Williams. And it was bubbling around in my circle that she had made this astonishing record called Car Wheels on a Gravel Road. Mm. Maybe the perfect singer-songwriter record of all time. Possibly. The lyrics, the sound, the whole package.
That's the closest thing to a great Neil Young record.
This side of John Prine. Yeah. So, yes, Lucinda Williams, Car Wheels on a Gravel Road. Maybe we'll hear the title track.
A house of Macon, Loretta singing on the radio. Smell of coffee, eggs and bacon, car wheels on a gravel road. Pull the curtains back and look outside. Somebody somewhere don't know. Come on, now, child. We're gonna go for a ride, car wheels on a gravel road. Thank you.
She keeps making good records.
She does. She has a great new one out. And
but this one's particularly good.
This one's quite a bit better.
I told you, Anne, that my friends gave me a stack of records toward the end of 98, and I ended up taking them back. I was living in Japan at the time, and I remember just lying in my apartment listening to this record when I got back to Japan and just lying there just thinking this is the most amazing thing.
I know.
It's just...
Why was it a surprise? I guess just because there was quite a bit of time between her previous record and that, but just the perfection of it. Perfection is always kind of a surprise, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was much... The previous record was a lot more stripped down.
Yeah.
It was a great surprise. Nice choice. Ann Powers. So... This is going to be a long show, everybody. If you're listening to the show, you might want to like get in some more comfortable clothing.
Pop a brewski.
Crack your knuckles so you can write us hate mail.
Yeah. In fact, speaking of hate mail, let's do this. Let's get it right out in front. We said earlier, jokingly, that people are going to write Dear Idiots, how could you? Let's do a blog post called Dear Idiots, the 90s. And you tell us, because we read it and we love it because we're music geeks, and, you know, look, we only have, we're not going to do a seven-hour show. We're not going to include everything, so we're taking a whole decade. We're doing it, and this show is going to be under an hour and a half. So 90 minutes for 10 years. We're going to leave a lot of stuff out. We're going to leave somebody's favorite stuff out. So here's the deal. Blog post will go up when the show goes up. It's going to be called Dear Idiots, the 90s. Something like that, and tell us what you missed. Tell us what you loved that we didn't touch on, and maybe we'll do a follow-up show. Maybe we'll something. But people will read it and they'll get fired up about something, and we'll all go listen to music that we missed or didn't think about. And it's nostalgia, and we all have
our
personal
thing. For
the
record, we thought about it. We just couldn't get to it.
Oh. Maybe D'Angelo will come out of retirement and write to us.
On Don't forget me.
You guys played Len, but you didn't
D'Angelo
play.
Talks like that.
He's another one. Because he's the one. I'm going to write a letter. Hey. Dear Idiot Anne, you forgot D'Angelo.
So let's
he's got to eat, too. D'Angelo.
Yeah.
No. All right, never mind.
That's true. So let's do song. We're each going to pick a song of the decade. We did our albums of the
decade.
Think
album of the decade
we
was hard.
We did surprises.
Really, I didn't have to think twice about my pick.
Okay.
Immediately.
Well,
let's hear it.
Yeah.
Sebado, Soul and Fire.
Such a great
Hit
song.
Hit it.
All right, let's just get to it.
I don't like that very much. Steven almost spit his soda, but here we go.
We're taking it from the top. Ultimate breakup song, ultimate heartache, that glorious push and pull and volatility of that whole loud, soft, you know, sound that people were, that so many bands were trying to capture in the 90s and still do. Just absolutely flawless song.
Birth of emo?
Yeah. Poetry. There's a lot of poetry in this song, too. I think it's just beautiful.
It's one of my very, very favorite songs.
Yeah, very favorite all-time song.
Just a little more. records Bubble and Scrape. Was that early 90s?
93, I think.
Sabado. Yeah.
Didn't they, you know, we talk about bands and how the 90s are back, so didn't Sebado have a little run a year or two ago where they were playing again?
So well, Lou Barlow's been making solo.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's been doing the solo, but I thought that...
I think there might have been, yeah, there was a reunion.
They, well, seems they like My Bloody Valentine got back together briefly right. for some shows.
Everybody's
Pixies
gets
were doing
together.
Some shows.
It's
yeah.
inevitable, but yeah. Mm.
But Sebado is another example of the bands with gigantic bodies of work, but one song, which was actually Folk Implosion. But
Natural
One.
Yeah. One. That's
Natural
the one.
Natural
yeah,
One was like
yeah,
a gigantic
yeah.
hit, and everybody's like, oh, yeah.
That wasn't a Sebado song, though.
It was a Folk Implosion.
It was Folk Implosion, but
it's
still there.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Giant. I'm still thinking of giant bodies.
For NPR music, it's all songs considered.
Somehow we've been silenced by the emotion of all of
that's
that.
Right. Right. Great song.
Can't
so,
even.
All right, great songs. Mm. Who else? Who can top that?
Yeah,
I'll try to top that.
Okay,
go, yeah. Steven, go.
I'll take the
take
song.
It on.
You'd think that I would pick something incredibly mopey, but
I believe I can fly. That's what you're picking. Right?
How could we have forgotten? You know, it's funny, in preparing for this show, I was scanning the track listing to a box set that I have conveniently placed in my iTunes here called The Brit Box, UK Indie, Shoegaze, and Britpop Gems of the Last Millennium. And it is like, there are at least 10 songs that could stand in as my favorite songs of the decade. I mean, Laid by James.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Anything off of the Ned's Atomic Dustbin album Godfodder, which is so great. Teenage Fan Club, The Laws, as we've mentioned. But also looking, I mean, bands we haven't even mentioned, like Oasis and Suede and Teenage Fan Club.
Remember when Oasis was like the biggest thing in rock? It was
for a gigantic chunk of the decade we're talking about. But the song I picked is by Blur. And the song, it really needs no introduction. This is Song 2.
Perfect radio song, isn't it?
Perfect song. That's the first time I've ever heard this song and not immediately repeated the song.
And we were...
Hit it, Robin.
You and I were like dancing around in here. It reminds me that the 90s was such a great era for like bobbing your head up and down and smashing up against other people. It was such a great...
I think that's a product of our having been young then.
I don't know. I'm doing it right now.
My back, sciatica.
Well, I don't know. I mean, between like all the amazing, like, you know, Ain't Nothing But a G Thing is going to make you put on your gangsta lean, you know, and then on the other hand, you've got all of this amazing rock. It's real body music. And, you know, Damon Albarn, still a relevant artist. Very also, so. By the way, with Gorillaz and his many projects, but he sings in that song, you know, When I Feel Heavy Metal, which... leads nicely into my choice for song of the decade. There are so many songs of the decade. I don't know, like thinking about, for example, D'Angelo's Brown Sugar, I could have easily picked that. I could have picked a song by PJ Harvey, so many, but I chose a song that I think still, I know still moves huge arenas of people night after night. It's by a little band called Metallica.
A little group you might have heard of.
Every morning there's a halo hanging from the corner of my girlfriend's four-post bed.
I'm sorry. I just decided
it's different.
See if I can use it for the weekend or a one-night
stand. Love the idea of
you. I'm sorry. I've just decided I'm just going to punk Anne for the rest of the show.
We haven't even talked about Smash Mouth. What is this show?
I so wish we had a camera in the studio right now.
This is the point where I reveal the Hesher within.
The people with hair are definitely loving this music.
I was head bobbing too. There just wasn't any action going on.
I didn't notice the good pick.
Many great records. I mean, so many great songs from this album too. I could have picked this as album of the decade, which it came out in 1991, so it was a start. But
yeah.
Enter Sandman, Unforgiven, Nothing Else Matters. Oof. It just doesn't stop. Sad but True.
You know it's sad but true.
Oh my God.
I still love them, even though they're definitely one reason I've lost some of my hearing. When I saw them at the Forum not long ago, the building was shaking, literally shaking. It was insane.
The thing is, a lot of hardcore Metallica fans view this as just the heresy.
They sold out by this one.
I'm sorry, but they're so freaking wrong. It's just, you know, to me, I'm a poptimist. I love it when music goes wide, and this took a sound that was, you know, great in the 80s, and certainly so much great, you know, thrash metal of the 80s, but it took it to a whole new level, no whole new audience, where, you know, now this is one of the classic albums of all time. Gotta credit them for that.
My pick's gonna sound really quaint.
But I also love your pick, honestly.
Let's hit it, Bob. What is it?
It's a little Britpop group called Corner Shop. They're English musicians from Indian descent. They mix. Well, this song that they did is called A Brimful of Asha. It's about this woman, Asha Bosley, who is a playback artist. She's the woman who is singing behind the people on screen in Bollywood movies. To me, it harkens to the Velvet Underground. It harkens to songs like Sweet Jane. So it's got that kind of catchiness to it. But it's a late 90s song that I just love.
ਐ ਕਿਆ ਸਾਡੀ ਆਸ਼ਾ ਜਿਹਨਾਂ ਸਾਡੀਆਂ ਸੁੱਖ ਸਬੇਲੀਆਂ ਨੂੰ ਦਿਨ ਰਾਤ ਮਨਾਉਂਦੀ ਏ ਕਿਮਰ ਕਰਕੇ ਦੇ ਸਟੈਂਸਿੰਗ ਬਿਹਾਈਂਡ ਮੂਵੀ ਸੀਨਸ ਬਿਹਾਈਂਡ
Brent Palash, and my favorite song of the 90s. So we've done best songs. Where the heck are we going to head next? Let's do this. We're going to end. We're going to each get one more pick, and we're going to talk about artists that still are relevant in some way. And
are still relevant.
Remain relevant. Relevant. Well, you know, I'm just going to continue my tedious shilling for my hometown by
well, if Carrie's not here, it's so I'm
going
to do it.
By
did she pay you to do this?
She's slipping me some PayPal action, baby. But one of my favorite bands of all time, and certainly not only for the music, but for the way they have enacted their career, the way they have remained vital and healthy and exciting and really stuck with their fans, and their fans have stuck with them. And yes, I am talking about Brand Van 3000. No, I'm talking about...
Dear idiots.
Pearl Jam. Love the Pearl Jam.
So you can cross that one off the list, everybody.
Dear idiots. Oh, never mind.
No, I mean... I was thinking, how am I going to segue from Corner Shop, a band I also love, to Pearl Jam? I was like, well, I've danced myself into a frenzy watching both of them, but I've done it more recently with Pearl Jam, who are still putting out great records. And their recent studio album, Backspacer, had this little song called The Fixer, which I think shows that not only has Pearl Jam taught us how to really have an amazing career in rock and roll, and to grow up in rock and roll, to become parents, to become, you know, full grown people still blowing the roof off, they've managed to really still write great songs. And here's one of them, The Fixer.
You know, I don't know why this makes me think of R.E.M., but a band that we haven't talked about that I owned a good part of the 90s.
Losing My Religion, another one of the best songs of the 90s.
So, you know, that was a band that we talk about still relevant. I had kind of written R.E.M. off, but their new record, man.
I know, it is really great.
It is just great. A great, 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 great record.
And we're about to get a new Eddie Vedder record, a solo record, and it's a... if I just say that Eddie Vedder is about to make a ukulele record, you'll think I'm absolutely joking, but he has, and there's lots of cool songs on it.
Eddie's such a lot more to come.
Just keeps unfolding. I'll pick My Bloody Valentine as a band that still feels relevant. And I think, you know, we think of more dour, slow, introverted music when we think of My Bloody Valentine, the one wonderful record, Loveless, that they did. But I was listening recently to a lot of the girl groups in, like, Best Coast, for example. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I find a lot of smiley happiness in Loveless.
Yeah, I can hear that. And I think the textures, you know, the sleigh bells is another one. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Play beautiful, beautiful gloom.
Can we play like 10 seconds of the top of the Best Coast record, and then I'm going to play...
Sure, this is the title cut, Crazy
yeah,
for You, right?
Right.
I can't do anything without you. Can't do anything.
Now just think of the mix of the guitars
That's
and the voice.
That's what I'm hearing, yeah, just
yeah,
the sound.
Works.
That's a
yeah,
surprisingly good call, Bob.
It doesn't have the depth or the layers.
I thought you said it's not going to happen again is what I thought you said.
It doesn't have, it's not layered in
That's
the same
right,
way, but it's got that same right, sort of airy feel to it.
So yeah, let's go ahead and hit When You Sleep from Loveless 1991.
This record, yeah, it was almost my pick for our album of the year. Album of the decade. It could have easily have been.
Well, I think that the other thing that's so relevant about the sound is the boy-girl harmonies, right? Which is the defining sound right now
that's
in
right,
so much of music, you know, so much indie music anyway.
What an amazing sound. I'm trying to figure out how they did some of that stuff as I listened
you know,
to it fresh again.
I was wondering that too, because I know that they really did a lot of layering with all the guitar sounds to get that sound. And so I pulled up just the Wiki article.
It sounds like a whammy bug.
If I could read just real quickly.
Go for it.
Loveless was recorded over a 2-year period between 1989 and 1991 in 19 different recording studios.
Oh my God.
He hated 18.
Lead vocalist and guitarist Kevin Shields dominated the recording process. He sought to achieve a particular sound, making use of various techniques, guitar strum with a tremolo. A large number of engineers were hired and fired during the process, although the band finally gave credit on the album sleeve to anyone who was present during the recordings, even if all they did was make tea. But I think Kevin Shields is kind of a genius, and
you like those like Jeff Mangum types.
Yeah, and he he hasn't really showed himself much in the years since.
What would we do without tortured souls?
But you know, they paint him as sort of this frustrated genius, you know. But I love that record so much.
Looking for the perfect
incredible
sound.
Yeah, really. Yeah, in search of the perfect sound, and I think he found it. I hope he's happy with it.
Hope he's resting comfortably.
Kevin, it was great.
Now, could we have another one?
Yeah,
please. It's been 20 years.
He did some stuff on the soundtrack for Lost in Translation that was good.
Don't take a whole album. I mean, it's not a lot to ask, is it? Well, one album every 20 years?
Well, you know, Kevin Shields, he is still with us at least. Stephen, you had such an interesting... I thought sort of odd pick for still relevant.
Yeah, I thought this was an odd pick too. I'm not disagreeing
well,
with
guys,
it.
Steven, this really was weird.
You guys are jerks.
So I'm very much looking forward to your rationalization for this. Go, Steven, go.
Yeah, can I get my slippers?
Yeah, your pipe.
Go for it.
All right, album I picked is still relevant. Now, one of the reasons I picked this, truth
Just
be told,
what is, it is
truth be told, it's one of my favorites, and it could have been my favorite, and I wanted to include it, is American Recordings by Johnny Cash. Johnny Cash, no longer with us. I'm not necessarily... Bob is taking off his shoes, and I'm going to take off my shoes and throw them at you.
He's going to get comfortable.
I mean, the album's relevant. I thought it was the artist that was... I mean, he's always relevant. He's like...
I'm talking about the album. I'm talking about this as a massively influential record. It marked the sort of rebirth of Johnny Cash as a major creative force, as an iconic figure. Johnny Cash was...
Reintroduced him to a whole new audience.
To new generations, plural. Johnny Cash was in commercial oblivion when this record was recorded. And so, first of all, you take a massively important artist and put him back in the spotlight that, in a way that has continued to the present well after his death. It also brought in, I think it was influential in terms of its production style. You had Rick Rubin, the producer, taking him and sort of taking a man and a voice. To me, it sort of ushered in a very, very welcome era of artists who had been around for 30, 40, 50, 60 years, and had sort of languished in obscurity and oblivion, and sort of taking them and reminding people why they're great by stripping away all of the extra nonsense. And so you have records that have come since, some of them more stripped down than others, but like Loretta Lynn, and you know, there's a new record by Wanda Jackson, Porter Wagoner had a record like this, Ramblin' Jack Elliott had records like this. Neil Diamond, I was just about to mention, who I don't think that creatively it was as successful as Johnny Cash American Recordings, but was another example of a way of approaching older artists that I think does them an enormous amount of justice. And in addition to being one of my absolute favorite albums of the 90s, the song I picked from American Recordings by Johnny Cash is Delia's Gone.
Delia, oh Delia, Delia all my life. If I hadn't shot poor Delia, I'd have had her for my wife. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. I went up to Memphis and I met Delia there. Found her in her parlor and I tied her to her chair. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. She was low down and trifling, and she was cold and mean. Kind of evil make me want to grab my submachine. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. First time I shot her in the side. Hard to watch her suffer, but with the second shot she died. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. But jailer, oh,
nice choice.
I have to admit, this whole series of recordings that he did reintroduced him to me too. I mean, allowed me to rediscover him and remember what a, you know, an amazing artist he was and what a treasure.
Well, and as simple as it is, you have to hand it to the production too.
Absolutely, I agree, and I want to say that, you know, Rick Rubin really, it didn't exactly revitalize his career because his career was doing fine, but it made him even more important, and he's one of the most important figures in the music industry now.
It certainly broadened the way people looked at him.
Yeah,
you know, people viewed him as a
hip-hop and metal.
Hip-hop and metal producer.
Yeah.
And what a great late in life run for his career, too.
Total.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, if you tick off the Dear Idiots list and you look down the list.
Okay. Green Day.
Weezer.
Here, just a second, Bob. Just pot up. Let's just go ahead and get this out of the way real quickly here. Bob, Ann, Steven.
Yes, Robin.
It's been a good ride. I love you all.
Drive by body pierce.
No, people are going to wonder why. No, we're not really going out on this. I just had to play it for a second.
Do you remember that scene in
Seinfeld? They played it at the end of the Seinfeld series finale when that finally ended. Or were you thinking of...
No, I was thinking of the hospital one. What's the one? ER!
When there's a famous
little boy
ER.
Dies, yeah. The son
of
the...
the time of your life.
We have not mentioned the Dave Matthews Band. We have not mentioned No Doubt.
Well, we had mentioned Green Day, and that's why I just did that.
And Green Day's still relevant. Look at American Idiot.
Yeah, it's huge.
Just goes on.
Have we mentioned Nine Inch Nails?
No. Oh, Trent, I'm so sorry. He's gonna.
Trent is sitting at it.
He's busy winning Oscars.
Dear idiots.
he's busy Trent winning Reznor Oscars.
Talks. Yeah, he talks like a mad wizard.
He's awesome.
Poor so we'll Bob. Bring this whole team down to Austin. We're gonna do South by Southwest with Ann Powers, our new member of our team. Stephen
Can't
Thompson.
Wait.
Robin Hilton, oh, you're never going to forget this one.
Yeah, yeah. That's when the hazing begins.
Oh, dear.
Well, I'm so glad I get to take us out because with an artist who's absolutely still relevant today, Beck. He was another defining artist of the 90s, and he was for the past decade, and he's showing every sign of being another defining artist of this next decade. And he had, I'd like to think, I'm a Gen Xer. I'm an aging Gen Xer. I was a 20-something all through the 90s, and I'd like to think that Gen X owned the 90s. That was our decade when we were doing great stuff. And this song was our anthem, and it said everything that everyone else thought about us at the time. The song is called Loser by Beck. They did. Everyone thought we were a bunch of lazy losers who didn't care about it. I mean, and they were right, and we're still a bunch of lazy losers.
Thanks, everybody.
Awesome.
Robin Hilton, Stephen Thompson, Ann Powers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
For NPR Music, it's a bunch of losers.
Do the hot dog dance.
Choking on the splinters. So